Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 6, The Demigods and Demons Declare Truths, Text Number 9. Rupam Tavai Tat Purushar Shabyeyam. Shayor Tibir Vaidika Tantrikena. Yogena dattak sahasnas trilokan. Pasham yamushmin nu havishvamurtau. Rupam form tava your etat. This Purusha Rishiva, O best of all personalities, Ijam, worshipable, Shreya, ultimate auspiciousness, RTB, by persons who desire. Vaidika, under the direction of Vedic instructions. Tadraikikena, realized by followers of tantras, like Narada Pancharatra. Yogena, by practice of mystic yoga. Data, O Supreme Director, Saha, with Naha, us, the demigods, Trilokan, controlling the three worlds, Pashami, we see directly, Amushmin, in you, O. Ha, completely unmanifested. Vishwamurtau, in you, who have the universal form. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O best of persons, O Supreme Director, those who actually aspire for supreme good fortune, worship this form of your lordship, according to the Vedic tantras. My lord, we can see all the three worlds in you. Purport. The Vedic mantras say, Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. When the devotee sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his meditation, or when he sees the Lord personally face to face, he becomes aware of everything within this universe. Indeed, nothing is unknown to him. Everything within this material world is fully manifested to a devotee who has seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavad Gita 4:34 therefore advises, Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva-darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Lord Brahma is one of these self-realized authorities. Swayambhur Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapilo Manu. One must therefore accept the disciple's succession from Lord Brahma, and then one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in fullness. Here the word Vishvamurtau indicates that everything exists in the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is able to worship him can see everything in him and see him in everything. Rupam tavat, Rupam Dvavaitat Purushar Shabeyam Shreyor Tebir Vaidika Tantrikena Yogena Dataksa Nastrilokyan Pasham Yamushmin Nuha Ivishvamortau. O best of persons, O Supreme Director, those who actually aspire for supreme good fortune, worship this form of your lordship according to the Vedic Tantras. My Lord, we can see all the three worlds in you. So, as a matter of sequence in the Bhagavad Gita, we find that, first of all, we have to fix our minds upon Krishna. As Krishna says, manmana bhavamad bhakto, first of all, think about me. That without thinking about Krishna, one cannot understand anything properly. Modern so-called scholars and scientists and philosophers, they try to explain everything without Krishna, and therefore all they wind up is ignorance. It's like trying to explain how a car is moving and not having any idea that there's a driver. Trying to explain all the mechanical things, how the wheels move, how the gears work, but taking absolutely no account of the driver. Now, what's important, the driver or the car? That modern knowledge is all about the car and nothing about the driver. But the car is meant for the driver. The driver is not meant for the car. And what to speak if you don't even understand that there is a driver, that only the car is going. So Prabhupada said this is like a child. A child may see on the street that a car is driving or is going and may think that the car is driving by itself or going by itself. But an elderly or more mature person can understand that within the car there's a driver. Therefore, to think things are going on without a driver means that people are childish. Of course, in modern society, people are given degrees and honors and titles and recognition and money, although they have no real knowledge. It is like a group of children who get together and elect one of their fellow children as the king. He never really becomes the king. He's still a child. But everyone's electing him the king, and he is imagining that I become the king. So similarly, without seeing how things are directed in this material world, first of all, with intelligence. Now, it is not just intelligence, but there's a person who has intelligence, who's directing the world, and he's directing it for a purpose. Even we can conclude that there's an intelligence behind the universe, and only a foolish person would conclude that, number one, there's no superior than oneself, which is the modern understanding of one's identity, that I'm the center of the universe, that I'm have the potential, at least, to control the universe and therefore get whatever I want. Even there's some kind of philosophy, if you simply desire something, then it'll come into being. Affirmations. You just keep on repeating the affirmation and it's going to happen. The only affirmation that will definitely happen if you keep on repeating it is I'm going to die. I'm going to die. And eventually you'll be correct. Eventually the universe will manifest itself in such a way as that you will die. Probably sooner than later. So this idea that I'm the center of the universe, or I can control the universe, that this is certainly a product of ignorance. Because why is it? Because anyone with half, well, a little bit of brain, we couldn't even say half a brain, that anyone with a little bit of brains can understand that throughout the whole universe, there's one energy controlling it already. It's called time. Time is everywhere, controlling everything. Time is changing everything at every moment, everywhere to change. Now, if someone could, in his meditation, stop time, then we get some appreciation that this person has some control. Hiranyakashipu, he understood that without controlling time, all his efforts to control the universe would be a waste of time. So he spent time, a lot of time, trying to control time, which externally manifests as trying to stop oneself from having to leave the present body that they were in. He went through it. Now, by his example, we can conclude that trying to control time is a complete waste of time. Because he couldn't do it. Prabhupada gives the example, some big, big horses are trying to cross a river. And they're all jumping into the river trying to cross, and they all get swept away. And then one weak, emaciated, thin horse comes along and says, I'll do it. So Hiranyakashipu couldn't do it, but all the rest of us little, tiny, weak, emaciated horses, we're going to do it. We're going to control time. Although we're being swept away at every moment by time, and what to speak of something that we could actually have some, exert some control over, namely the modes of nature. Of course, we don't control the modes of nature, but we can choose which one we want to become controlled by. Or we can choose to be beyond the modes of material nature by taking shelter of Krishna. So that's our choice. But even people don't know what their choice is. They don't know the real choice to choose between the modes of nature and being controlled by Krishna, because they don't believe there is a Krishna. They don't believe in time. They don't believe intelligence behind the universe. In other words, they may think that there's something's going on here beyond my control, and they usually stop with some governmental authority or secret authority is the one who's manipulating everything. They never really get into, I'm being controlled by time. And time is manifesting the three modes of material nature, which is controlling me, time's controlling me, that yes, everything here is changing, and it's changing. I'm getting my experience according to the three modes of material nature that I've qualified myself to enjoy or actually suffer. And therefore, under the influence of the modes of nature, sometimes I'm happy, I think I'm happy, sometimes I think I'm sad, and usually it's in between. Usually I don't know where I am. I'm trying to figure it out. And generally speaking, Maya is presenting us, in any circumstance, an alternative that will put us into another kind of Maya. And that's usually which kind of Maya we choose has a lot to do with what particular modes of nature we're already situated under, and therefore we choose to come into association with others who can give us advice about that mode of nature. When we're in the mode of ignorance, we take shelter of people who are also in the mode of ignorance, give us advice that we want to get, how to, we could say, manipulate or work under or work within the mode of ignorance. Similarly for passion, I want to make money, I'm in passion, I want to enjoy. We just generally don't come to the Hare Krishna movement to the Bhagavatam lecture to find out how to enjoy in the material world. We may go online and try to get advice from the learned businessmen, the learned connoisseurs of how to gratify their senses. And there is a lot of information that when the urge to gratify the senses is there, everyone will give advice on how to do it. And in goodness, of course, there is somewhere or another in Kali Yuga on this planet, there's something called goodness. Of course, people don't know what goodness is, but everyone's looking, in one sense, somewhat civilized people are looking for peace. Which is a manifestation of the mode of goodness, but generally their methodology of getting peace is derived from people in ignorance and passion. And therefore it's impossible to achieve peace in ignorance and passion. One can achieve a kind of peace in ignorance, that is, if you don't have a mind, if your mind becomes so dull it doesn't work, then it's quite peaceful. It's like if you have a car and the engine blows up, you don't have to worry about maintaining the car anymore. The engines, you don't have to worry about fixing the car because there is no car anymore. So if your mind blows up, you don't have to worry about it anymore because it doesn't work anymore. So you don't have to worry about fixing it because it can't be fixed. But actual peace is to work in the material world. And while you're working, not to be in anxiety about the results, to be actually satisfied in the work itself. And the work is so enjoyable and so interesting and exciting that the results become unnecessary. But people are simply interested in the results of in passion, and disgusted in ignorance, or can't even think about anything in the ignorance. The result is they can't think, so they don't worry about the results because they're not getting any results except for ignorance. So some people may be interested in coming to goodness, but how they do it is unknown. Who they learn how to come to goodness, they think goodness is to walk into the park and look at the flowers. And smell the flowers, which is probably better, probably they're doing less harm by doing that than anything else. But they think the flowers are meant for they'll sacrifice the flowers, they'll smell, but they think they're meant for their enjoyment. And therefore, even while they're walking the park and stepping on the ants and the other insects, all they're doing is karma. And generally speaking, they walk in the park and they think about all kinds of anxieties they have after they get out of walking the park. And besides the fact they've never learned how to breathe, so they can't even smell the flowers. And even if there are flowers in the park, they generally have no smell anyhow. They have no aroma. But they think I'm a good person because I walked in the park. And that's as close to goodness as most people come in Kali Yuga. But actual real knowledge is to understand, to take those flowers and to pick them and offer them to Krishna. Then one is coming, that's goodness, that these flowers belong to Krishna, they're meant for Krishna's enjoyment, so I should offer them to the deity, so the flowers get benefited, I get benefited. Because if the deity is satisfied, then everyone involved in satisfying the deity actually gets some real benefit. So that's spiritual. Matevidu swarthagatimi Vishnu. So the first business of a human being is to understand how things are actually going on. Now, if Krishna actually revealed himself, then it would be obvious. Everyone would be in ecstasy. Everything would be seen clearly. And we'd understand how not a blade of grass is moving without Krishna. Then we would actually, when we ate something, then we'd actually appreciate that this is coming from Krishna. And I should eat something in the service of Krishna. And then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to chew it, how to appreciate it, how to remember Krishna while we're doing it. Even when we're breathing, we'd actually understand that the Krishna says, prativyam cha, punya ganda prativyam cha, on the original smell in the earth, that whatever we're breathing, whatever we're smelling, actually that energy is actually not different from Krishna, especially if it's not toxic. Then we'd be Krishna conscious. We'd actually understand things properly. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, every verse is a meditation, but in relationship to Krishna. Punya ganda prativyam cha tejas chasmi vibhavaso jivanam sarabhuteshu tapas chasmi tapasvishu. That I'm the original flavor, the ganda, in the earth. Punya ganda prativyam cha tejas chasmi vibhavaso. That I'm the original energy in the fire. Then that's called awareness. Everything else besides that is different degrees of less ignorance and ignorance and goodness. But without Krishna there, it's a good degree of ignorance, even in so-called goodness. And what's the harm, one may think? Well, if we do not recognize Krishna, then we'll think that we're the Lord's material nature. And what's the harm of that? Well, the problem is that everything we do in that consciousness will cause ourselves trouble and everyone else trouble. But especially it causes ourselves trouble. Because that's how the material nature works. Whether we like it or not, everything we do under the spell of ignorance and passion, and even goodness, which is mixed with those modes, is really impelled by lust, anger, and greed to different degrees. The modes of material nature, they act through their energies, namely lust, anger, and greed. And what's the problem with that? Well, worldly and anxiety, for one thing, hankering, lamenting, frustration. And what's the problem with that? That all our relationships will be colored by those different desires. I may pretend I love you, but ultimately, if the time came, I'd love to eat you, if that was the circumstance. The dog may pretend it loves me. It may be licking my face, but if it got hungry enough, it'd probably eat my face. So we may pretend in the material nature so many different things in our relationships, but ultimately it gets down to, in goodness, we follow actual Vedic injunctions, we follow Krishna's instructions, and therefore we're acting to some degree as an instrument for Krishna, and therefore at least we have a proper relationship with others. When we're not hankering in our relationships, when we're not lamenting in our relationships, when we're not frustrated in our relationships, when we're doing it as a matter of duty, then actual relationships are beginning to develop in some way. Matrivat paradareshu, paradwareshu, lostravat, atmavat sarabhuteshu, yakpashiti sapanditaha. That one who sees every lady except for his wife to be like his mother, and every person's property except for one's own to be like garbage in the street, and sees all of the entities as spiritual beings, then he's said to have some knowledge, some learning. Because after all, his souls, what do they do in the spiritual world? They're not making money to support their Chintamani palace. They don't pay rent there. They don't have to work in order to maintain their spiritual bodies. They're not trying to progress from cowherd boy or from servant to cowherd boy to parental love, the gopi, and then beyond that, trying to take Radharani gets Miss Spiritual World 1 year and everyone else is competing the next year for it. There's no there's no competition there. The so-called get a higher position. Everyone is trying to become more of a servant, not more of a master there. So if we're trying to become more of a master here, rather than more of a servant, then we're going the wrong direction. We'll be going down. Therefore it says that pride comes before the fall. So here, whatever position we have, we're trying to develop our service attitude, non-exploitation. And therefore the Brahmins, who are the mode of goodness, they have the least desire to lord over the material nature and the most desire to serve others, to give them knowledge how they can stop lording it over the material nature. How they can become an instrument for Krishna, either by following the Vedas or, more importantly, by engaging in devotional service. If a learned person thinks he has so much Vedic knowledge, but he's not meek and humble, he's not trying to impress upon others to become meek and humble and serve Krishna, then he becomes like Ramaharshan, and who had so-called knowledge, but it was devoid of humility, devoid of Krishna consciousness, and therefore Balaram had to kill him. Because it wasn't knowledge, it was the height of ignorance. He kept the most important aspect of consciousness, namely humility. Amadi Vama Dambit Vama Hingsa Shante Arjava, that knowledge begins with amadidvam, pridelessness and humility. Humility, pridelessness. And all the other knowledge is supposed to help build upon that, not eliminate it. Not that I don't have any foundation, but I'm building a skyscraper. The skyscraper is 100 stories tall, but I have no foundation. And therefore, lo and behold, the whole thing collapses after some time. So we think we're advancing, but we're making progress and becoming more and more important in the material sense or even in the spiritual sense, then there's no foundation. And eventually pride cometh before the fall. So without recognizing ultimately Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everyone will become puffed up by false prestige. Even Brahma, when he didn't recognize Krishna, he got into trouble. Indra got into trouble. Shiva doesn't really get into trouble, but apparently he does. So anyone who doesn't recognize Krishna, at any moment, he'll find himself in some kind of trouble. Now, for us, we're always in trouble, so we don't recognize when we're in trouble. It's just our normal state of being in trouble. But the fact that if we make enough advance, and eventually we'll be able to recognize what's the difference between being in trouble and not being in trouble. Being in Krishna consciousness and not being in Krishna consciousness. And then we'll understand what is the process of liberation from our false conception, ultimately being God, or that there is no God. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam, it's simply stressed again and again in all these verses that there is a God called Krishna. Whether we take him as a cowherd boy, which is rather advanced, or we take him as Vishnu, as the creator of the universe, the maintainer, the super soul in the heart, somehow or another, we have to connect with that conception. So it molds our life. So something changes in our life. Something inspires us to recognize Krishna in the hearts of others, in his energies, and so that we're inspired to utilize these things in Krishna's service. Especially to help tell others that there is a Krishna and explain it in a way that they can understand it and actually start using their energies too in Krishna service. And then eventually, we'll actually become, Krishna will reveal himself, and then everything that we thought that we try to understand theoretically will gradually become experience, will be realized. And that's called success in life. But if no one knows, has any idea that there's a God, or how to serve God, or what the purpose, then they have no idea what the purpose of life is, and they'll make up a purpose of life. Make money, control others, get rid of my enemies, whatever. They'll just concoct something. And the more they do that, the more they'll get into ignorance, and the worse everything will become in this world. And that's what we see now. Simply, as Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupāda said, this world there's no scarcity of anything except for Krishna consciousness. And there's quite a bit of that scarcity. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you very much for inspiring lecture. Could I please ask, when you mentioned that pride comes before the fall, what can we do in a moment when we observe that we have a tendency to be proud? So when pride very strongly attack us, what can we do at that moment?
Use our intelligence. Try to figure out, what am I proud about? Just like a prisoner is in a prison cell, he's being beaten by the guards. But somehow or another, he drew a nice flower on the wall. And he takes a picture of it, and he's proud, and sends it to everyone on his Facebook page. Look at my cell. I have the prettiest flower picture of anyone in this prison on my wall. I'm proud of it. He's in the prison. He's being beaten by the guards, but he's proud of drawing a flower on the wall. So he's a fool. So in this body, we're being forced by the fourfold miseries to suffer, birth, death, old age, and disease. We don't know where we're going after we're leaving this body. We're 1/10,000th the size of hair, tip of hair in size, and we're thinking with this huge body, so I'm a complete fool, and yet I'm proud. What do I have to be proud of? I've been put into this material energy. I'm being tortured by the threefold miseries. I'm in complete ignorance of who I am. What do I have to be proud of? So we have to think, use our intelligence to question these things. And maybe our pride will go down a little bit. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for today's class. As you were speaking, I was thinking about how the living entity becomes so illusion, and even as devotees trying to practice Krishna consciousness, we may fall into anxiety about different situations or people and say, oh, if only they became devotees, their life would be so different. Or, oh, if only they became serious after becoming devotees, then their life would be so different. So devotee also falls into anxiety about others becoming devotees. Is this something that will actually hamper the devotee from being effective, because his anxiety now colors his perception, his thinking, his interaction with others? And if so, how to overcome this tendency?
Well, it depends on our mood. If we're sincerely in anxiety, like Prahlad Maharaj, that people are not devotees and we should work to bring them to devotees, and at the same time we're in Krishna consciousness, so we want to become a better instrument for Krishna, then that will help. But of course, if we want to force people to become devotees, because to lessen my anxiety, that probably won't work. As a matter of fact, we'll probably get into conflict with others, thinking that, you know, who are you to tell me that you think you're better than me? that you're going to save me. Well, I have something to tell you. I'm going to save you. I'm going to save you from your false ego of thinking you're going to save me.
So true, Guru Maharaj.
So, but on the other hand, by humility, we can see Prabhupada as an example, how he tried to save. He was very in anxiety to save others. We can see how he did it. We have to learn, try to examine it closely and intelligently through the scriptures, how Prabhupada was working, how the basis of everything was doing humility, but he was able, because of advanced Krishna consciousness, to use a variety of emotions and activities and instructions according to time, place, and audience to be effective.
Right.
Krishna gave him the intelligence because he wanted it. Mm. So the more closely we become aligned with Krishna's purpose, the more he gives us intelligence, the more we'll be able to manifest as an instrument for Krishna with a humble desire to serve our spiritual master and our acharyas as their instrument, not as the savior.
Thank you very much for that answer.
Hare Krishna. Anything else? Okay.
Avaduta Rai Prabhu has a question. Even before the appearance of bhakti, the Lord is controlled by the association of devotees. Then what to speak of after bhakti has made its appearance? Vishwana Chakravarti Thakura, Tika on Srimad Bhagavatam 11.12.1. Question. Can you please give some comment on this? Thank you for coming back from Ukraine.
Say that again. Before the appearance of bhakti, what happens?
Even before the appearance of bhakti, the Lord is controlled by the association of devotees. Then what to speak of after bhakti has made its appearance? Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur, Tika on Srimad Bhagavatam 11.12.1.
Well, I don't know. Generally speaking, Krishna being controlled is at the stage of Krishna Karshini, that Krishna is at this, when the devotee is actually in prema bhakti, then he's controlled by the devotee. Before that, you know, the devotee, even the most advanced devotees, it says at the beginning of Lalita, of Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, practically speaking, only Srimati Radharani can control Krishna. So the only way we can control Krishna at the less advanced stages is, as Prabhupada said, Srimati Radharani is there, and we give the flower to Srimati Radharani and say, my dear Srimati Radharani, you're a very dear servant of Krishna, so please offer this flower to Krishna. So Srimati Radharani offers the flower to Krishna, and she says, my dear Krishna, a very nice devotee is giving me this flower to offer to you. I think he's a better devotee than me, then you should give him some of your blessings. So only when we offer things in the disciples' succession, and they, to those who are actually controlling Krishna, do we have any influence over Krishna? Okay.
And then, in one lecture, I heard that the material world is complete and perfect. Is it not contradictory to Bhagavatam, which says Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults? And a question arises, how faults are complete and perfect?
Yeah, it's Kali Yuga is complete and perfect false. All men to torture the living entities, to drive them towards Krishna. Material nature itself, from the spiritual point of view, is perfect. Just like if a child is disobedient, as it says in the Bhagavatam, and the kind father gives the child over to a very strict disciplinarian to correct the child. And his method, therefore, the very method of correcting the child is perfect. Now, it's not very pleasant, but, and one may take objection that why is this person doing things which are not very pleasing to the child, and therefore it's a problem. But actually, it's not a problem because it's solving the problem. It depends on which point of view you're looking at. So certainly, it's an we have an ocean of faults because it's the time where everyone forgets Krishna, but it's the time where the heaviest reactions come from forgetting Krishna, and therefore it encourages everyone to take shelter of Krishna more, especially through the chanting of the holy name. So the more the reactions are, the more people take shelter of Krishna, the more perfect everything becomes. So it's a perfect arrangement.
And then the last question. Many devotees have experienced that ISKCON temples are the best place for getting trained up in humility. But how to become humble when one lives at home?
Well, if you have a wife, she'll help. And if you don't have a wife, and you don't want one, and you can't come to the temple, well, online or something like that, read Prabhupada's books, look at Prabhupada's movies, see a good example like Prabhupada or others, and try to appreciate them, and then try to apply them in your dealings with others. If you have no dealings with others, well, it's going to be very difficult to practice humility. You usually have to have some kind of service to others. Therefore, it says, Satambra Sangama Mavirya Sambhido, one should seek out the association of devotees. Okay. Hvala. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.